He was poor, and he was just getting poorer. And he didn't know how to get out of it. So he spoke to his friends, spoke to his wife, spoke to his family, and they saw that the situation was just getting worse and worse. It reached a point where on Shabbos, they would collect the potato peels, and that's what they were eating. And they had heard that way out yonder, there was this island that roads were paved with jewels and gems. And, you heard this story before? And they verified, and from what they could tell, it was true. It was worth going there. And they did some research, and they discovered that if they put together a certain sum of money, then he would be able to go on a ship and sail out there, and he would be able to pick up these precious stones, come home, and they bring up the whole financial situation of his family. So they decided it was worth going through with this endeavor. And they went to every person they knew, and they took out loans. And finally, they had enough money, so he traveled out to the port city, and he took whatever money they had borrowed so that he could pay his fare on the ship, and his poor wife and the kids, they stayed behind, and they figured however they managed until now, they'll manage for another month or two till he gets back. He goes on the ship, and they set sail, and throughout the journey, they're talking about how when they get there, their problems will be solved. And after going through all kinds of treacherous storms at sea, they finally made it to this island. And as they see the island at a distance, they see glistening stones. And finally, they hit the port, and they run off the ship, and each one has brought sacks along, and they start filling their sacks. And they agree that in 3 weeks' time, they'll set sail back home. So the first hour, everyone's picking up all the stones they could find. And then they see there are so many stones out here that they just figure, you know, each stone is enough to make us so rich back home. What are we going to look through these stones for? So they look and they look and they look. And you know what? After 3 or 4 hours, they get pretty tired of looking because they see all the stones are beautiful and each and every stone is going to be worth a mint. So they fill up their sacks and they have nothing left to do. They've decided they'll set sail back home in 3 weeks. So they go throughout the island looking to see what do these people live like. I mean, if they don't value stones, what do they value? So they're walking around the island and they see that the people, they do business with something that seems a little funny. They look closely and they can't believe it. On this island, what they value is chicken fat. So there's a guy who has left his family behind. He has to make ends meet here on the island. And on this island, he can't use these precious stones because there are so many of them that they're worthless. They're lying on the floor like regular stones. So he takes the little bit of food and things he has with him and he opens up a shop. And he figures, for 3 weeks, I got to figure out how to make ends meet. And for 3 weeks, he's doing business and he's thriving. And by the end of 3 weeks, he's got sacks and sacks filled with chicken fat. So he's pretty happy with himself. And he's become a well-known businessman in the short 3 weeks that he's there. He has storage houses filled with chicken fat. And he's sitting there on the beach playing, and he suddenly hears the horn blow that the ship is setting sail. So he runs to his warehouses, grabs the sacks of chicken fat, runs back to the ship, and they're setting sail back home. And 2 days into the journey, the chicken fat starts smelling. And 4 days into the journey, he starts to remember, wait a second, what did I come here for? Not chicken fat. Not chicken fat that'll rot by the time I get home. I came here for precious stones. And he sits there, and he's a little bit ill at ease with himself. When they land back home, so his poor wife is standing there in tatters waiting to see him come off the ship, and he says, guess what I brought home? And she says, what? And he says, chicken fat. And she says, what? And he says, you don't understand. And she says, you're right, I don't understand. So he says, well, when I got there, they all valued chicken fat. So I got taken away with the chicken fat. So So I was doing good business there. I made a lot of chicken fat. His wife looks at him, and she thinks he's gone mad. So she looks in the sacks, and she sees there's chicken fat. And she looks at him, and she looks at the sacks, and she looks at him, and he starts crying. He realizes what he's just done. And she starts crying. And the neighbors start coming to them and saying, you know, you guys took loans. And he looks at them, and he looks at the chicken fat. And the neighbors look at him, and they look at the chicken fat, and they take him to court. And he's put in jail. He's imprisoned. So now he's used his last resorts to go out to this island. He made it to the island, and all he's come back with is some spoiled chicken fat. And he's sitting in jail weeping as he realizes how his poor children are sitting at home hungry and how he blew it. And he can't, now he's even worse off because now he has all these debts to pay off. How is he going to pay them off? So he's sitting there in jail weeping. And as he's sitting there weeping, no one's there to comfort him. His wife says, I got to go see what I can do to help the kids out. I can't be with you. And as he's sitting there in jail weeping, he sticks his hand in his pocket and he starts playing around with the stones he was toying with as he was sitting on the island when the ship was about to set sail. And he's playing around with these stones and suddenly he looks at them. He says, wait a second, I got something here. I have something. So he calls the jailer and he says, let me out, I can pay my debts off. So they bring him before the judge and he shows the judge and the judge says, fine, and he goes and he sells the stones. And with the money he sells the stones for, he pays off all his debts and he's left with a little bit of money that he could open up a small little shop and he can at least not be as poor as he was before he sets in. So this story was told over by the Magid Midovna. The Magid Midovna said, that's a story of our lives. We come down to this world and we have all these mitzvos. You could put on tzitzis, you could put on tefillin. You could say a kind word to someone. You could call your parents and ask them, how are you doing? And wish them a good night. Wish them a good Shabbos. We have so many mitzvahs that are so easy to come by. And yet, we're focused on getting ahead in this life, which is all about chicken fat. We have the jewels, and they're so easy to come by. Without a second thought, you can catch so many mitzvahs. But we're taken by the chicken fat. And when our neshama is going to come back to Shemayim, so everyone's waiting up there to greet it. And when we come to Shemayim, they're going to ask our neshama, hey, what'd you do down there? And our neshama's going to say, I got a Rolls Royce, I got a Porsche, I had a mansion. And they'll look at the neshama and say, excuse me? That's what we sent you down there for? Just like everyone looked at that guy. You came back with chicken fat? That's what you came with? So we're going to come up and say, what do you mean? I made a mint. You know how good I was at the stock market? Everyone else lost money when it crashed. I made money. And they're going to look at us and say, that's what you have to boast for? How much Torah did you learn? What did you accomplish in your life? How many people's lives did you save? What good did you do with your life? And then it'll dawn upon us, wait a second, I had all those years down there. What did I do at that time? Just like that guy who comes back from the island, that's us. So in our opening class about making the most of our time, Machon Meir, I think this is a very important story. I heard this story as a child. I was in first or second grade. And it stuck with me. You see, it's been many years since first or second grade, and I'm still telling the story because I think it's a fantastic story. We come here and we lose sight. And in Machon Meir, it's very easy. You guys, I mean, you have Sfarim, you have an English library, you could get set up with chavrusas, you have classes, you guys could soar. And sometimes, because it's so easy, we tend to feel like, yeah, okay, so I won't learn now. I'll go take a coffee break. I'll learn later. And the time could just fly by. And before we know it, we've been here a month, 2 months, a year, and now we got to move on. And then we ask ourselves, wait a second, what did I do with that time? So the first thing we have to think about when we come here is, how are we going to best utilize our time? And the best bet is, get yourself notebooks and make yourself game plans. Make a schedule for the day. You shouldn't have times in your day where you're just sitting there saying, well, what have I got to do now? Nothing. Let me go see if the internet's available. There should be things that you want to accomplish. If you want to learn about Jewish history, so in your free time, learn about Jewish history. You want to cover Tanakh, cover Tanakh. You should try to set yourself goals. The Machon gives you only so much. And then there are other times you'll need to take breaks. But you know what? There's enjoyable learning, which you could do during the break. You could read Medrash. There's the Medrash Says. There are all kinds of enjoyable forms of learning with which you could fill your free time, and you'll end up knowing so much more. One of the things we should do, which I don't think we'll get a chance to do in this class, but we will do it, Bezat Hashem, is take a tour of the English library. We'll go through it, and I'll show you books that you might enjoy, and books that that are worth taking your time to read. So we'll see if we have time at the end of the class. I will still do it. If not tonight, then maybe Wednesday night. We have to take a tour of the English library. You should sit down and think what you want to accomplish when you're here. Now, you might say, I have no clue, and I need more time. So that's fine. Give yourself another week. Give yourself another 2 weeks. But don't give yourself another year. Meaning, in a week or 2 weeks' time, you have to think, these are the books I want to accomplish. And there are a few things you should think about accomplishing during your stay here. Halacha is something you'll have to know. You have to know what you got to do. But before we start discussing what you learn, we should really break down our learning into three forms of learning. There's knowledge, gaining information. There's skill, that's gaining you're learning Hebrew, you're learning how to read, you're learning grammar. Those are skills. You're learning how to translate Gemara. And then there's connection. There's learning that really connects us with the Torah. And each one is important in its own right, but the most important is probably connection. My classes don't focus on connection at all. My classes focus on only one thing, and that is information. Those of you who have attended or listened to the classes online, you know, my goal is to get as much information as possible in the amount of time that we have. So you got to get the other two elsewhere. That's your job. Maybe our Friday class works a little bit on connection. Maybe. It's philosophy. I don't know if I would call it connection. But my classes, I say very clearly, our goal is to cover as much ground as possible in the amount of time we have. My goal is information. You have the rest of the day to work on the other two. Skills, you're best off in the classes of Goldenberg or whichever class you're in. And if you could get a chavruta to work with, and a certain amount, you should invest on your own. I mean, taking the time to study the stuff, the grammar or whatever Hebrew skills you're doing. So what that leaves for us is really information. And here, there are a few areas which you should contemplate covering. Firstly is halacha. If you haven't covered Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, if you're not frequent with some book of halacha, so you got to take time to start frequenting yourself with halacha. Now, halacha is the type of thing which you can't learn. Most people cannot learn for more than 10, 15 minutes at a time. So it's a good idea to interspace your halacha learning. I recommend getting into the habit of learning right after davening one or two halachot. And if you do that after every tefillah or before every tefillah, you'll end up learning about 6-7 halachot a day, which is about the amount a person can remember. If you can retain that, that's good. To try and cover whole chapters, I think, is beyond a person's capacity. You have to be frequent with the Jewish calendar. You have to know it. I mean, that's our lives. If you know the calendar, you know how to live as a Jew. If you don't know the calendar, you don't. So you have to know. Now we're in the month of Cheshvan, there are not going to be any holidays. Next is going to be the month of Teves. There are no holidays, there's a fast day. After that is going to be... I skipped, right? Right, Kislev, very good. What polite group of guys, no one corrected me. Okay, so after Cheshvan we go into Kislev. Kislev, we know there's Hanukkah. Teves, the Rosh Chodesh Teves is also Hanukkah, and then we have the 10th of Teves as a fast. Shvat is Tu B'Shvat. So take the time to memorize the months and know the holidays. You guys have to do that. Now, every year I say this in the beginning of the year. And last year we started a new thing that towards the end of the year when guys were going to leave, I said, now how many guys did it? And of course, no one did it. So we started a new class, Judaism 101, instead of our Parsha class, instead of other classes. And quite honestly, it's a cop-out. Meaning, it's a class that's filling in for the stuff that you guys should do in your free time. It's a pity, but on the other hand, you guys shouldn't leave Machon Meir without knowing these basics. So it's your responsibility. That's the truth. You have to learn Asher Yatzar by heart. If you're not going to know the blessing of Asher Yatzar by heart, how are you going to make it after you go to the bathroom? You're going to carry a little pocket Asher Yatzar with you? I don't believe it. And if you don't know Baruch Nefashos by heart, then chances are you're not making that one either. And Ala Michya, come on. If you know it by heart, you'll say it. If you don't know it by heart, it's a little tough. So some people carry this pocket bencher with them wherever they go, which is nice. If you do that, kol kavod. But if you don't do that, like most of us, so you got to be realistic. These are things you have to know by heart. So if you ain't going to take the time to do it, you're not going to know it. And I want to tell you a little story. I took my son to shul the other day. So he's getting old enough to come to shul. And of course, when you take your kid to shul, so you have all these dreams about what shul should be like for a kid, right?
So I take him to shul and I sit him down, and before we go in, I give him this whole introduction, and shul, you have to have respect and you're standing before God, and even if you don't understand what you're reading, we'll only be there for a short amount of time. You have to sit there quietly and respectfully. And right, I have this introduction, and he walks in with this very solemn look, sits down next to me, and I'm a fidgety guy, like you guys saw, standing around, walking around all the time. So he's sitting down in prayer, and I do what I always do in davening. I stand up, and a second later I walk two seats over, and I walk two seats back, and I walk two seats over, and I walk two seats back. I can't stay in one place for a very long time. It's very tough. It's torture for me sitting up here, but there's a video camera up there, so what can I do? So I come to shul, and this is what I'm doing. And what do you think happens after a few seconds? My son gets up off his seat, and he starts walking around the shul. And I run after him, and I said, what are you doing? So he says, I'm walking around shul. So I said, why are you walking around shul? So he says, because you're walking around shul. So I stopped, and I thought, and I smiled, and I said, okay, you have a point. I shouldn't walk around shul, and you shouldn't walk around shul. And we both sat down, and I had another torture session sitting down in one place. I had a very good feeling when I learned the Aruch HaShulchan that discusses the halacha that you're not supposed to stand up in the morning Shema, because people might think that you're standing up, because the halacha is you have to stand up. And then the Aruch HaShulchan says, but those fidgety people that are always standing, you can't say that they can't stand, because they always stand. So no one will think that when they stand, it's a sign that they hold the halacha is you have to stand for Shema. So I said, okay, you see, they're normal. It's a norm to have fidgety people in shul. So I'm one of those. But bottom line, if I want my kid to sit with proper decorum, then I have to do it myself. The same thing is true with everything else. My son came home from Gan when he was like 3 or 2. No, he was 2. And after he goes to the bathroom, he starts making an Asher Yotzar. And I was floored, a 2-year-old making Asher Yotzar. But in Gan, that's what they taught him. So Baruch Hashem, I say Asher Yotzar. I know it by heart for a good couple of decades. But you guys remember, in a few years you'll be parents. Your kid's going to come out of that bathroom saying Asher Yotzar. What's going to be? Will you know it by heart or won't you know it by heart? Meaning, you got to think also in terms of the long term. You're going to be parents. So there are certain things that you have to know. You have to know to live proper Jewish lives yourselves. And if you think you can get away with it, so you should know your kids are going to catch you. You don't want that. You have to do what everyone else does. We have a mitzvah. After we come out of the bathroom, we make a blessing of Asher Yotzar. Everyone has to do it. And if you kid yourself, well, yeah, I'll get there. Just remember, it's not so far off that your kid will get there before you. So that's, if you need that impetus, use that. But everyone has to know Asher Yotzar by heart. And that the same goes true for a few other blessings, like we mentioned. There are other things which we will work on together, like saying Kiddush together, getting the tune and the words for Kiddush. If guys want it, we'll fit that into the schedule somewhere. We've done it previous years, and you could catch it online, but if you guys want, we could work on it together. That's fine. When it comes to information, you should have a general handle on things. There's an excellent book by Miriam Adahan. I don't remember what it's called, but I could bring it. It's this big pink book. I don't remember what it's called. But Bezrat Hashem, I'll bring it. It's basic facts, basic Jewish facts. You should have a handle on what are basic Jewish facts. What I recommend that every person summarize each parasha. You're here, you're learning the parashiyot, summarize it for yourself. So that when your kid comes home from Gan, and he starts telling you it's parashas matos, and you think, okay, what sticks were they talking about? Mate is a stick, what's parashas matos all about? And your kid says, no, Tati, no, we didn't learn about sticks. So you say, okay, I know, what'd you learn about? Tell me. And he figures, oh, I got him. So he tells you, we learned about Moshe throwing the staff in front of Paro, turning into a snake. And you say, yeah, I know that story. What's he going to think? Like, come on, old man, you don't know your stuff. Parshas Matos is about the division of the tribes and the tribes that were given the commandment of how you take a vow and how you annul a vow and the responsibility of vows. But because it begins with the commandment to the Matos, to the tribes, which are also called Mate, which is a staff, so it's called Parshas Matos. So you should have at least a slight familiarity with each parasha. Now all of this takes work, takes diligence, and takes your own work. And that brings us to the last point, which is an innovation that we are contemplating starting this year, if you guys want it, and that is that we work together. If you guys want, we could set up a curriculum where each week you have stuff that you'll work on, and then if you want, I'll test you on it, and then we'll set up the next thing to work on. If you want it, think about it. If you want it, let me know. if there are people who want it, so we'll set it up. But this is where the ball is in your ballpark. The Mahon could only give so much. And how you develop it beyond that, that's up to you. I strongly recommend you take a good history book and take things that will be interesting. A lot of the work you're going to be doing all day is hard. My classes I strive to make easy. It's information, but it's not like you have to really work hard. We're not working on translating in TikTok and stuff like that. But a lot of the work during the day is hard. People usually end their first week at Mahon Meir with their mind is sizzled. So the recommendation is take some stuff that's lighter in the beginning. Take history, take Medrash, and as time goes on, then you'll be able to take things that are heavier to do in your spare time. Okay, any questions? No questions. Okay, so that's it for our introduction. Let's go over to the library, and then we'll go into Arvit.